Good morning, Scotland on Sunday with Isabel Fraser and Bill Whiteford. The first survey of orchards in Scotland for well over a century is underway, and the findings suggest that the country has only a fraction of the capacity it had in the mid-1800s. Orchards first took root here more than 800 years ago, with over 40 varieties of apple, as well as pears, plums and other fruits, having been successfully cultivated over the centuries. But varieties like the Bloody Ploughman and the Lasso Gowrie are in danger of disappearing now that the traditions of tending and developing orchards have faded. But all may not be lost. Enthusiasts and community groups are coming together to revive orchards in Scotland and in the process enhance the environment and support fruit production. And the survey process has turned up long-forgotten orchards in some of the nation's most inaccessible corners. Dr. Crispin Hayes is Executive Director of the Scottish Natural Heritage Project Orchard Revival.
Yeah, we've got a great and lengthy history of orchards in Scotland. They really came over with the monastic houses, that settlement of various different religious orders that came in this the late 1100s. Sort of around 1170, 1180. They came to the Scottish borders, first of all, and then they sprung up to the Forth and indeed the Tay, and then further up the coast to Arbroath and the likes. And so they brought with them from their bases in the Low Countries, France and Italy to a certain extent, they brought with them this practice and technology of growing fruit. And so we see it's starting then, pears being the predominant fruit that they brought with them. And the settlement of orchards in Scotland grew from that base. And so we see these religious houses where they have lands. They require their tenants to look after the orchards as part of the tenancy agreements, to replant them. And so we've got hundreds of years of this practice of growing fruit.
What were those fruits like? You mentioned pears, but these would be unlike the modern dessert pears that we have now. They'd be more of a sort of staple.
Indeed, yeah, they aren't like the table fruit that we have now. They would be more starchy, and they would require cooking, so they were cooking pears. But they also stored better. And so, you know, over the last 800 years, there's certainly been some improvements in fruit varieties, as in with many things. You know, people have been breeding for improved qualities. But they were, and they still are in some of the older varieties, they're a good staple. And we've got to think back to the times before the discovery of the New World across the Atlantic. We didn't have the potato. We didn't have starchy storables that people could rely on through the winter, and pears became one of those, although, you know, to a much lesser extent as a staple than perhaps wheat and barley, but storing those also had its problems. But even in living memory, people are storing, just in ambient storage in straw-filled boxes, people were storing pears from the picking season, which is around now, all the way through to February, March. And you pick the right varieties at the right time and store them in the right way. And you don't need to have cold storage. You don't need to have anoxic stores, which is typically how fruit's stored now. The technology was there. So they had the practice. They had these established ways of actually using this fruit right through the winter season.
And talk me through some of the varieties that there were and why they developed the way they did. Because we're perhaps familiar with the idea that not all apples, for instance, are immediately edible off the tree. Some are used for cider and so on. But what was the variety? What were they being bred for?
Well, I think they were being bred for being useful for storing, certainly the storing ability. So in terms of apples, there are, you know, there's a huge variety of different cultivars. I mean, there's some in 1971, the Ministry of Agriculture, as it was then, recorded 3,500 apple varieties in Britain. There's a lot fewer pear varieties, but some of the older pear varieties would be very ancient. And of course, they're all derived from wild relatives. That typically come from Central Asia, and actually, in case of plums, they come from the Middle East. So the damson comes from Damascus and that area of the world. But these varieties had good storing properties. They yielded well. You know, they wouldn't be seen today in terms of comparing it to our delicious table fruit. They wouldn't have been seen. They wouldn't be seen as particularly desirable now, unless you bottle them, you cook them and bottle them, or you preserve them, or you pickle them, or do something like that with them. We've got a lot more variety of different foods that we can draw on today. They didn't have that in those days.
And so you say that they started with religious houses, monasteries and so on. How did orchards themselves then develop through to the 19th and 20th centuries?
So looking at the literature, what it seems is that orchards were on a fairly small scale in most of Scotland. And so it became practice that people had them as really private orchards for their own use. And that was widespread. And indeed, it still is widespread. It was really the coming of the Act of Union and the stability that that provided that enabled the larger commercial orchards to exist. And those commercial orchards are predominantly on the Castlegarrie between Dundee and Perth. And also, I mean, as everybody knows, the Clyde Valley is also a famous orchard area. It's famous now for its plums, but the plums are relatively recent. They've only been there as the main crop since the late Victorian era. Before that, it was apples and pears. And indeed, there are apples and pears still there, but in a minority. So those were the two key areas, and probably for different reasons, they became the main areas. But actually, even today, throughout the borders, there are a lot of orchards throughout the Scottish borders. And indeed, the Castle of Stirlingshire was another area where there were a lot of orchards. But there's a good distribution throughout Scotland. And in our recent work with Orchard Revival, we carried out a project, the National Orchard Inventory for Scotland. We were surprised how many new orchards there are up in the West Highlands, up on the West Coast.
So what's the inventory actually found then, in terms of how many there used to be, how many there are now, and what we've lost and what we've gained?
Well, the inventory, we've done a fair bit of work on the inventory over the last several years. It's been a really good Scottish Natural Heritage funded research project. We started off by doing a desk study across the whole of the country, and we found nearly 2,000 candidate sites, just looking through old surveys, using aerial photos, old maps, and this sort of thing. So the Ordnance Survey first edition back in 1860 was very detailed, and it showed orchards, individual orchards. And so we had this this desk study data set, and then in the second phase, we went out and carried out survey work, looking at each of the sites that we thought was an orchard. And that work was carried out in collaboration with local groups. And they had volunteer surveyors. We provided the systems and the mechanisms and how to collect the data and the standards and coordinated all of that. But essentially, it was done by, it was a big citizen science project. And local organisations collaborated with us, and they organised it and got their local volunteers to go out and have a look at these local orchards. So these local organisations now have a very good idea of what their orchard resources in their area, and our intention is that that forms a foundation for, you know, further work to actually target resources and make use of fruit.
And ultimately, optimistically, are we hoping that more people will actually plant new orchards or extensions to orchards that are there at the moment?
Absolutely. We've actually got a good climate. The key issue that we have in Scotland is the variability in the winter with the late frosts. And so actually, we're seeing less late frosts these days. And it depends where you are in the country, of course. But we can grow grapefruit in Scotland. We're not going to compete with for table fruit in the supermarkets. That's not going to happen. You know, there's going to be much more reliable places, whether it's in the south of England, in Kent, or the West Country, and indeed in further south in Europe. We're not going to compete with those. But actually, we can grow some really good quality fruit here, whether it's apples, pears, or plums. We could create some fantastic value-added products, as much of the rest of the Scottish food and drink business does. that's got a great story about its heritage and indeed the varieties, some of the interesting varieties that are available. And that could be the basis of, you know, a renaissance in some of the commercial orchards.
That's Dr. Crispin Hayes, Executive Director of Orchard Revival. We're joined now by Kate Hall, who's a woodland advisor to SNH, Sue Pomeroy, who's a horticulturalist based in the West Highlands, and also works with Orchard Revival, that social business for traditional orchards, and by Ron Gillis, owner of Cairnamore, which makes wine and cider in Perthshire. Morning to you all.
Yeah, good morning. And
Sue Pomeroy, I think you're involved in the inventory that we're hearing about there. What does that mean for someone like you? Do you go out and count trees?
Yes, it was a great job. I got to go out in all weathers and all conditions to count trees and get to be really nosy in people's back gardens and orchards. And I had a very diverse area on the west coast of Scotland. I found myself quite often going off to islands or across lochs to remote estates. Yes, it was really interesting. It was a fantastic project altogether.
Any unexpected surprises there?
Very much so, very much so. We found the most amazing orchard on a west coast island, quite far north, and we found what we believe to be one of the oldest apple trees possibly in Britain, dating from the 1700s. We sent it to Brogdale. We think it's Warner's King, which is a very old cooking-type apple. The trees were magnificent. They were referred to in Fraser Darling's book when he stayed on the island back in the 1920s, and he said he found these apple trees, and they were at least 100 years old then. So we think they could be nearly 300 years old.
I'm surprised, because one thinks of particularly perhaps pear trees and so on as not living very long. I mean,
absolutely,
maybe 100 years max.
Absolutely. Well, there's a very old Bramley tree, I believe, which is over 100 years old, we know of, that's still seen. So we're actually in the process of having these trees possibly carbon dated. But their evidence is they are so, so old. They've actually fallen over in some places and rerooted themselves. And they are huge and fruiting beautifully. Slightly neglected, it has to be said, but that's being dealt with as we speak, which is wonderful.
Yeah, and when talking about the West Highlands, I mean, it's probably just my prejudice, but is it not too wet for a lot of fruit trees in the West?
Well, yes, it's very wet, and the orchard sites traditionally were obviously chosen with great care and protected by walls, essentially, which were very, very important to any produce growing in the West Highlands, because we do get 80-mile-an-hour gales, and we get over 2 metres of rain a year. So the grounds had to be prepared, and in fact, there was great evidence of orchards that I went to see, new ones and old ones. The old ones that sustained, obviously, were planted in the right places with good drainage and good shelter. The new ones, some of them aren't faring so well because they were planted in the wrong place, but the new ones that have been planted in the right places with the right amount of care and attention with good drainage are thriving, absolutely thriving.
SNH, I suppose, deals mainly with buildings, Kate Hall. That's how I would imagine it. Are you kind of late to the game when it comes to orchards?
Well, just if I could just correct you there, Scottish Natural Heritage.
Sorry, what did I say?
Not buildings.
Oh, buildings. Yes, well, I don't know. But yeah, I think of it as, you know, I suppose estates and things that have been around for a long time.
Yeah, so in terms of orchards, it's one of the most threatened habitats in the United Kingdom. And as Sue has said, in the work that she's done surveying up in the West Highlands, we've had surveyors all over the country looking at orchards. And orchards were, you know, once upon a time planted the length and breadth of the country. We've seen large, huge areas have been lost. So we now don't have as many as we once did. But they were very important for biodiversity, for the birds and the insects that the old trees support.
Yeah, but is any part of what you're about, you know, actually getting these back into production or you know, if you like, renovating them? Or would you rather see some of them just sort of fall into desuetude?
No, absolutely not. Scottish Natural Heritage is very, very keen to see these orchards restored. What is happening up and down the country is community groups are engaging with these places where fruit trees grow. They're coming together, they're managing them, they're harvesting the fruit, they're using them in a way that SNH is very keen to see happening. This is connecting people and nature in the very best of ways, where they're coming together, they're sharing food, they're having community events, can be lots of fun things like singing songs and reciting poetry to apple trees and dressing them up at certain times of year. You know, all of this kind of stuff's going on, and SNH is really, you know, delighted to see that happening. But we're also keen to see this, as I said, you know, threatened habitat being addressed in terms of restoring the old orchards that are there, but also in terms of seeing new orchards planted. So trying to redress the loss and spreading that across the country.
Okay, when you say dressing up trees, what exactly is going on there?
so this goes on in the winter months. It's called wassailing. I've not actually been involved in one myself, but it's a kind of celebration of the fruit tree.
I always associate that with England. You know, here we go, a wassailing and all the rest of it, or wassailing. Yeah. I've obviously pronounced it wrongly, but I thought that was an English thing, but it's Scottish as well.
It's a thing, you know, associated with fruit trees.
Excellent.
And it's definitely going on in Scotland. And if you go onto the Orchard Revival website, you will see that there are a number of community groups around the country, and many of them in the winter months will be holding events where they'll be wassailing, reading poetry to trees and dressing them up.
Excellent. And it's an excuse to drink cider, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sue, let me ask you, though, about when you think about orchards, you could think, in terms of social history, you could think of the big, large walled gardens, the heated orchards that were providing fruit year-round for, well, not year-round, but seasonally, for the big house, as it were. But in the Highlands in particular, and I'm sure in other agricultural rural areas, there was a long tradition of very small orchards on crofts, and they were very important to a way of life there. I mean, how many trees constitute an orchard, and why do you think that's all fallen off?
Well, actually, we decided 5 trees constitute an orchard, of any fruit whatsoever. So when I went out, I was surprised at how many orchards there were. There were a lot of crofts on the west coast of Scotland, and fruit trees were very, very important in the past, and they're actually becoming more so now. And in fact, far from falling off, new entrants to the crofting have actually started planting more and more fruit trees, which is delightful to see, and they're getting it right. They're planting them in the right places and seeking advice on doing this, so they have a far better rate of survival. But certainly a lot of the old crofts I went to had older trees, had older orchards. I mean, some of them dated back to 80 years, some possibly 100 years, but the fruit was very, very important to them because, as Crispin mentioned before, they stored the fruit. They didn't have Tesco's just down the road to go and buy fruit from. I mean, where I live, it's at least 36 miles to the nearest shop. So you can imagine, 100 years ago, people didn't have the wherewithal, didn't have the transport to go to buy so much.
Yeah, but see, there's something very moving, I think, in the Highlands about these old orchards, even more than the really impressive ones in the big estate houses. There's something very poignant about walking through an old orchard.
Absolutely, because they were absolutely utilised. They were used not only for the fruit, for the habitat it provided underneath, for their pigs, for their sheep, for their ducks, grazing habitat. They fed the surplus fruit to their animals. Really important, really, really important. And as I say, today we're seeing this coming back. And as I speak, I mean, going out to do this surveying that Crispin set up, it was wonderful because so many people were so enthusiastic. I had phone calls, absolutely torrents of phone calls saying, please, can we have our orchard recorded? And on the back of that, people have been buying apple presses and juicing their fruit, and they use it. And in fact, I would say the majority of the orchards that I surveyed, everybody uses the fruit in some way today.
Well, let's talk to someone who uses the fruit, Ron Gillis from Kiernamore. You use the fruit, what, for wine and cider?
Cider. and apple juice as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not just your own fruit, but you're there in the Carsagowrie. You get people to come along and you buy the apples off them.
It's not our fruit at all. Everybody just brings their apples in, or we go out and pick some as well. But it's just created a market for all the fruit that used to go to waste in Perthshire, Fife as well.
You say it used to go to waste. That presumably is because people had old trees, they get a huge crop of them and don't know what to do.
Exactly. I mean, you can get half a tonne off a good apple tree.
And what sort of apples are we talking about there? Because people presumably will have everything from dessert apples to cookers.
Hundreds of different varieties of apples. There's we got invited onto an island in the River Tay at Perth where there's a golf course. There's an 18-hole golf course called King James's or King Jimmy's because there was loads of apples coming off these five old trees. We went there the first time and took 2 tons of apples off of these five trees, all the same variety. Old trees, still don't know what they are. We just call them King Jimmy. And I remember tasting them and thinking, yeah, no, they're not really that tasty. But we took them off, the first year we took them off on a boat and made a cider out of it, and I made a lovely cider. So that's the one we call King Jimmy's.
Extraordinary. Kate, that sounds interesting, doesn't it? Actually, around the place, there are actually little bits of left of orchards that are producing apples, and sometimes people don't even know what they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, more and more people are beginning to realise the value of these local orchards and how they can use the fruit. And community groups are, as Ron is saying, and Sue, that community groups are starting to use that fruit for juicing, for making, for using for home consumption. And SNH is really very supportive of that, connecting local food with people, and this ties in really with a policy initiative that Nourish Scotland are taking forward with Scottish Government, the Scottish Good Food Nation, which is about people being able to access good local food.
Yeah, what's the market like for that, Ron? I mean, do people come to you and say, I'm looking for something that's local. I don't want a cider that's made from, you know, English apples.
I was a bit mystified to begin with when the whole apple orchard revival thing happened because there didn't seem to me to be a shortage of apples. However, that's just the way it goes sometimes. Sometimes the product comes first. And I thought, well, we've got a history of producing, making use of the fruit that the Carsagowrie is famous for, strawberries and raspberries. But over the years, that's over 30 years since Cairnamore started, I've seen lots of new things coming onto the market, growing locally. Apples, cherries, blueberries. And we just take whatever's there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you can sell as much as you can make.
Chime in with the times, yeah. Mm.
But you can sell as much as you can make.
It. Well, we make as much as we can and then we sell it.
I suppose that's very wise. Well, let's have a word from our guest reviewers of the papers who've been listening closely to this. Stephen and Danny, what do you make of it?
Well, I'm absolutely fascinated because I've got an apple tree in my garden. And
just the one?
Just the one, not an orchard, just the one.
You've got a fifth of an orchard.
It produces plentiful apples, but they're all very small and I don't know what they are, and you'd have to pick and peel about 40 of them if you want to make a strudel. But now I'm wondering if I could be making cider. I mean,
you just
that would
squash
be absolutely...
them. Ron, sorry, did you want to say something there?
Can I just suggest if anybody's thinking about planting an apple tree, plant two about 9 feet apart.
Why?
So you can, when they're mature, you can sling a hammock between the two.
Excellent.
You lie there, hammocks are perfect. Lie there in the sun.
And eat an apple.
Glass of Cairnamore cider.
All right, that's a very good plug, Stephen.
Oh, seriously, man.
Absolutely. You know, like Danny, I too have a fifth of an orchard, you know. And, you know, I was out yesterday gathering my apples with my trug, and I'll be making a pie with it later today.
Yeah. Well, do you know what kind they are?
I'm ashamed that I do not. I'm unaware they are. They are anonymous apples.
I think we've got something
after
called
myself, perhaps.
We've got something called Laxton Superb. They've never been very good, but this year were the best they've been. So, what's your advice to people who might want to plant a tree or an orchard, or as Ron suggests, two trees 7 foot apart?
I would totally agree with Ron on that. Two trees is very useful for more than one reason.
Pollinating.
And I would go for a good cooking apple and a good eating apple. Something like Discovery is a really good all-rounder. Copes with rain up in Scotland. Bramley is the new Warner's King. And certainly they both have nice low branches to swing that hammock from.
Right.
So, yes, if anyone's looking for apple trees, again, there's plenty of websites out there suggesting good varieties for, depending on the area of the country you come from. There's certainly a lot of old Scottish varieties out there which would be worth trying. As I say, I mentioned Discovery, that's a really lovely eating apple, a beautiful red colour. And today you can get them on quite small rooting stocks, so you don't have to reach too high for them. So you can get them really to fit any size garden that you have.
In case anybody missed it, Ron was saying there that it's not that wet, but of course he's
not
in the cars. He's in the cars in Glasgow. That's right. Yeah.
Dundee is the sunniest part of Great Britain.
We're talking about apples a lot, Kate, but we're talking about tree sizes. So do you need to think outside the box, not just apples? Let's think about other things for Scotland, depending on the size of your garden and all the rest of it. What else is out there that would do well, do you think?
Yeah, well, the inventory has unearthed that people have planted and are planting lots of other fruit kinds. And a number have been mentioned, but Victoria plum is one of the other commoner fruiting trees.
And cherries and Angus.
But absolutely. I mean, I myself have a cherry tree. I mean, everybody will know this year's been an amazing year for fruit, but we were harvesting kilos of beautiful cherries off our cherry tree this year. Quince trees have been fruiting this year, hazelnut trees, of course there's the nut trees in orchards as well, so even walnuts.
And what are geans?
Geans are wild cherries.
All right. Okay.
So you'll be lucky if you get them, before the birds get them. But they are edible and they're nice fruit, but they're small cherries.
I was trying to think what you can do with quinces apart from jelly. Ron, do you do anything with quinces?
They're not really that common or reliable.
Right.
We used to have one. And I have.
I think there's a gin you can make from it, Ron, if you want to branch out.
Great, I've heard about that.
There's
quince cheese.
Yeah. Quince cheese.
It's quince cheese. You can make Mombrillo. Japanese or Chinese quinces are very good. They grow really well on the west coast. Quite a few big ones I've seen. Big shrub satyrs. Yes, Mombrillo, that's a really old traditional thing to do with quinces, actually, but they're terribly hard to peel. That's the only problem.
Right. OK, well, there's plenty of food for thought there for us
and
to be getting
drink.
On with. And food, food and drink for thought.
So could I just
to know that everybody are looking at their bit of ground and thinking about
thinking, what can I put in here?
Growing stuff that they can eat and drink again instead of lawn, you know?
It's a good idea.
Vegetables and all that as well. It's all making a big revival.
Kate, briefly.
Yeah, just briefly, I just wanted to direct people to the Orchard Revival website. If they have an orchard or know someone who has an orchard that they want to get onto the inventory, all the recording forms are there.
Excellent.
And if you want to connect with the community groups, there's lists of community groups that are working in orchards. So
Kate Hall.
Go
thanks.
On down. Yeah.
Thanks very much. Kate's from SNH. Sue Pomeroy is from Orchard Revival. Ron Gillis from Care No More. Also our paper reviewers, Danny Garavelli.
Keep going.
Just in the background, you'll hear why we're doing this in a moment. We're back tomorrow at 6, so we play out now with the theme.